Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, self-styled America's mayor after the attacks of 9/11, will not be outgunned on the national toughness front. At South Carolina's conservative military academy, the Citadel, over the weekend, Giuliani said he wants to boost the size of the U.S. Army even more than President Bush. And on that tough talk, Rudy is leading McCain, leading Romney, leading Hillary Clinton by a hair in the latest polls on the 08 race for the White House. Can it last? Up next, On Point, a look at the mercurial one-time mayor who would be president, Rudy Giuliani. Joining me first today from Washington is Michael Finnegan, reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's been covering the Giuliani campaign and has recently been with the candidate in Iowa and New Hampshire. Michael Finnegan, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So what do you see when America's mayor goes out on the hustings in the rest of the country?
Well, terrorism. He talks about terrorism everywhere he goes. It's the overriding theme. And his leadership in New York City in the aftermath of 9/11 is the main thing that most Americans know about him. And he knows that, and he's emphasizing that and counting on that being the main thing that carries him into the White House.
And what about everything else in the closet? The word for a long time was, oh boy, when people find out about Rudy and his positions on abortion, on gay rights, on gun control, not to mention the sort of New York wild side of his time as mayor there, that will sink him. What about that stuff?
Well, so far that hasn't happened. There's been conversation about that, obviously, but it has not appeared to damage him in any significant way. But we're still a long, long way away from the time when actual votes get cast. And his opponents in the Republican primary are apt to emphasize those things in a very big way in the early states where the primaries and caucuses take place. And so whether that lasts is completely unknowable at this point.
You were with him in Iowa, in New Hampshire. Do voters bring these things up, or are they just hanging on? You know, Rudy Giuliani says, sort of beat them here, or it will come, beat them there, or it will come here, terrorism will come here. Are voters asking him about the social issues that have played such a large role in past campaigns?
They are asking him about these issues, and he has responses on each thing that comes up. I mean, most often would be abortion, and he is talking about abortion in a very different way than he did when he was running for mayor of New York City in the 1990s. Then he ran as a pro-choice candidate who unequivocally supported abortion rights, and now when he gets asked about abortion, he opens by saying how much he hates abortion and thinks that it is the wrong thing to do, and it would advise anybody against having one. But then finally finishes by saying he does support abortion rights. And as you mentioned, he has equivocated though on Roe v. Wade, saying in the debate last week that it would be okay with him if Roe v. Wade were overturned. And he's also changed his position on the procedure that critics call partial birth abortion. He signed a questionnaire when he was running for re-election as mayor saying that he would oppose any ban, but when the Supreme Court upheld the ban on the procedure recently, he welcomed that decision.
Let's listen to that remarkable moment from the first big GOP debate last week at the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California. Chris Matthews, who was the moderator there, put the question to all 10 candidates. Where do they stand on Roe v. Wade? Should it go? Should it be overturned? 9 of 10 flatly said, yes. Rudy Giuliani, well, here's what happened when Matthews asked him if he thought the Supreme Court should vote to overturn the decision that legalized abortion.
Mayor.
It'd be okay.
Okay to repeal?
It would be okay to repeal. Would it be okay also if a strict constructionist judge viewed it as precedent? And I think a judge has to make that decision.
Would it be okay if they didn't repeal it?
I think the court has to make that decision, and then the country can deal with it. We're a federalist system of government, and states can make their own decisions.
Okay to repeal, okay not to repeal. How has the Giuliani campaign dealt with that odd moment in the days since, Michael?
Well, they have stuck to what he has been saying since the beginning on abortion, that he would appoint strict constructionist judges to the Supreme Court, that he doesn't approve of the procedure, but the bottom line is that he does support abortion rights.
And the latest poll numbers on this mayor of New York, mayor of America, who would like to have it all?
Well, he's still leading in national polls on the Republican primary field by roughly 10 points or so over Senator John McCain of Arizona.
That's narrowed from 23 points or so not so long ago.
Yeah, it has. His numbers have softened a little bit, but the numbers in Iowa and New Hampshire are quite a bit closer. He's roughly even with McCain in surveys in those states, or McCain's even ahead in some polls in New Hampshire. Of course, again, it's very, very early, and these numbers are quite unreliable in terms of predictive value.
And the Giuliani campaign, how hard is it looking over its shoulder? And there's a lot of talk that Republicans aren't satisfied with their field, that you could see Fred Thompson in there, Newt Gingrich in there. Is there a sense that he's really, really, really vulnerable, if not to Romney or McCain, and time could tell, maybe he will be, but if not to one of them, to one of these guys in the shadows stepping into the limelight?
Well, there's no question that there is dissatisfaction among Republican voters with the field of candidates that are out there now, particularly conservatives. Many don't feel that they have a candidate who represents who's in sync with their values. Democrats, on the other hand, are quite content with the field of contenders on their side.
And Rudy sails on. Michael Finnegan, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you.
Let me turn to New York now and welcome Ellis Hennigan. He's a columnist at Newsday, longtime watcher of Rudy Giuliani, covered Long Island and New York politics for 22 years, host of the nationally syndicated weekend show, The Ellis Hennigan Show, on the Talk Radio Network, a political analyst at Fox News Channel. Ellis Hennigan, thanks a lot for being with us.
Oh, good to be with you, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Byron York, White House correspondent for the National Review, author of The Vast Left-Wing Conspiracy. Byron York, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Ellis Hennigan, first, remind us, everybody says once people learn it all, they're not going to believe this guy. He won't be able to possibly hang on to conservative Republicans. Take us back into a little bit of that Giuliani history. What is it that if the whole country knew it, they wouldn't believe that conservatives couldn't go with?
Well, boy, Tom, you hit some of the high points already. Abortion, probably at the top of the list. Very pro-immigration kinds of views. Openness to gay rights. A tougher gun control. And then you've got the category of things that I think of as kind of the weird Rudy. Because if you get to know him, you realize that at the core there's a kind of an odd guy. Some of it are the marriages. Some of it are the personal relationships. But
a marriage to his second cousin, a marriage to his second wife where he announced that he was going to leave her basically at a news conference. And then, of course, now there's Judy who goes with Rudy. What's the rest of that picture on the weird side?
Well, yeah, all of that stuff. And then, you know, when he left Gracie Mansion and his second wife, he moved in with two very nice gay gentlemen. A lot of folks might have a question about that. Again, those are things that if you're going to be a successful politician in New York City are somewhere between not hurting you and helping you a little bit. But when you get out into the Republican primary field, you got to say there's a big question as to how social conservatives, who I think most of us have always believed are very sincere in their beliefs on those kinds of moral issues, how much of a problem it will be. And the question, I think you put your finger on it earlier, do you want to win more or do you want to stay true to a set of beliefs and values that I think are very core to the social conservative view of the world?
Byron York, how do you interpret what's going on so far with Rudy Giuliani out front? Is this to hell with the values, we want a winner, or something else going on here?
Well, having listened to this conversation to this point, I think I should point out that a lot of Republicans think that he has a very strong record, and that they think the great strength of his record is prior to September 11th. Yes, they think he would be good on national security, but they also look at what he did in New York City. I believe
huge turnaround.
Huge
turnaround there.
In the last year before Giuliani was elected mayor, I think there were a little more than 2,200 murders after he had been mayor 4 or 5 years. There were 600. They look at the incredible things he did on crime, what he also did on welfare, reducing the welfare rolls in New York, on the economy, you know, and they say that this is an extraordinary record for an executive. And Republicans especially, I think, look for an executive to lead them. But the country does, too. There's a reason we don't elect senators, haven't done it since John F. Kennedy. And all of the weak points that you've talked about, Giuliani, are certainly there. But when, if you look at a president as someone who should be able to bend an enormous bureaucracy to his will, Giuliani is perhaps the person with the best record that suggests he could do it.
And all the rest, the things that could be dead weights on him, you think the GOP base is willing to jettison those for the executive profile you described there, the strong man potentially in the White House?
Well, that's the gamble that Giuliani is making. I mean, he is betting that in this coming election, that issues of national security and issues of competence will be so important that people who might normally vote against him based on their differences with him on social issues will overlook those issues and vote for him.
Byron York, you address exactly that question with something from Mr. Carbonetti, who I believe is one of the right-hand men in the Giuliani campaign.
Exactly. And he said, look, I hear this all the time. You know, when people find out about Rudy's real positions on abortion and gay marriage and guns, they'll never vote for him. But he said, you know, if you're a single-issue voter, whether it's on abortion or guns or the environment for that matter, don't you know where all of the candidates stand on your most important issue? And he was arguing that the polls right now already reflect people.
I mean, they've already discounted this. They know exactly. It, they've digested it, they've dealt with it, and they don't care.
And, well, some of them don't vote for him, but Giuliani is still in the lead, even with those factors taken into account.
Let's listen for just a moment to former Mayor Giuliani at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina, over the weekend. Here's the message. You know, I'm tough. I will be tough for this country. The only good defense is a strong offense, he says. And he said he wanted a much bigger army than we've got now. Let's listen.
You know that the only good defense is a strong offense. Those who counsel defeat, those who advocate that we share with our enemy a timetable of our troop withdrawal don't lack patriotism or love of this country. What they lack is a clear vision of what we're facing to keep us safe.
Ellis Hennekin, can he ride that horse all the way to victory in this primary? He's not the only guy in the Republican Party saying be tough, using words like defeat and defeatism. McCain is out there. Mitt Romney. I mean, they all talk tough on defense and national security.
Maybe he can ride that horse. I have learned to cover the guy over the years. Do not underestimate him. But look at the single thing that Rudy has done in that realm since leaving mayoralty of New York City. And that's two words, Bernie Kerik, right? His idea, Rudy's really chief proposal of what we should do in Homeland Security and how we should deal with this terrible threat from abroad involved recommending and urging and campaigning for, as Homeland Security Secretary, a man who was least suited to that job, who is now facing severe criminal problems, was the closest, frankly, probably the closest personal aide and friend to Giuliani over the last decade or so.
And the phrase mob connections is all over his New York press, true or false, I don't know, but that's the phrase that comes with him.
Well, that's right, and he's facing very serious criminal charges right now, and, you know, we all presume he's innocent. But I'll tell you this much, I don't think most Americans, maybe even Rudy himself, would look today at Bernard Kerik and say, boy, this is the kind of guy that we should have leading us into the complex war on terror.
So what does that say about Rudy Giuliani as the security champion?
Well, I mean, it's just one sort of chink in that armor. Listen, he did an absolutely terrific job symbolically in the days after 9/11. I don't think anybody can argue with him, particularly in contrast to Governor Pataki or even to President Bush in those days after 9/11. A terrific symbolic presentation of New York standing up. And I think he gets tremendous points for that, not just around the country, but even in New York, where we're somewhat of a tougher audience.
And what about the pre-9/11 picture? Byron York says, don't forget, he was in there for, what, 6 years? And New York really got turned around in that time. Will New Yorkers give him those garlands, those laurels today?
Well, it depends on what issue you're talking about. Byron's absolutely right on the case of crime. Crime went way down during his time here. Now, of course, there are many politicians around here who will take credit for that, but Rudy certainly deserves a big piece of it. But then you talk about relations with across the ethnic life of New York. For instance, that was something that probably got somewhat worse when he was here. Some of the economic measures grew tougher when he was here. So it's a mixed picture, as there would be in the case of most big city executives at that time in our history. But no doubt about it, the crime thing was something to take a bow over.
Of course, Senator John McCain, looking at Giuliani, took a swipe at him when he formally announced his run for president, the presidency, on April 25th. You know, Giuliani's been lauded, as everybody says, for his handling of 9/11. But McCain here notes that New York's emergency services were not properly prepared.
We must also prepare far better than we have to respond quickly and effectively to another terrorist attack or national calamity. When Americans confront a catastrophe, natural or man-made, they have a right to expect basic competence from their government. They won't accept that firemen and policemen are unable to communicate with each other in an emergency because they don't have the same radio frequency.
John McCain putting the needle in there a little bit on Rudy Giuliani. Let's turn to our callers from New York City. Marlon, you're on the air.
Hey, good day. How you doing today?
We're great. What do you see? What do you know?
Well, yeah, I'm from New York, and I was there during Rudy's tenure, and I've been there, you know, from all my life. And I can tell you that what America's looking for now, we're looking for character, we're looking for leadership, we're looking for people who can connect with people, who have a sense of responsibility for the whole of America. Rudy's record in New York speaks exactly to the opposite type of person. He's a divisive figure. He's pig-headed. He's basically immoral. The Bernie Kerik thing is not an aberration. It's who Rudy is. It, birds of a feather flock together, certainly fits Rudy and his associations with his people. He's very nepotistic. The hiring process in New York City, which is always, we've always tried to really strike a balance with the minority communities, Black and Latinos, because there's so many people there, and we have lots of professionals there, so we make sure that people get into the loop, into the civil service,
But Marlon, you know, Rudy Giuliani came in, and the sort of word was that he thought that New York had been taken prisoner by minority group leaders who didn't have the city's best interests at heart, and he wasn't going to let that go on. What do you say to that perspective, Marlon?
And that's the perspective of somebody who is really narrow-minded and unrealistic and about the balance that's created in a dynamic metropolis like New York.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy came in and was really disrespectful to every Black and Latino professional who had anything to do with civic life in New York.
Yep.
This guy is taking credit for crime reduction when the trend in the nation at the time was a drastic reduction across all cities in crime.
Marlon, we hear it loud and clear. Let us pick it up. Byron York, how about it? Rudy Giuliani, divisive, pig-headed. He put Bernie Kerik out there as his nominee, as his proposed, you know, guy for Homeland Security. And what do you make of that? And you know, the crime was going down nationally anyway.
Well, that's kind of like people who say that, you know, Bill Clinton doesn't get any credit for the economy doing rather well during his time in office. The guy who's in charge does get credit for that. And you do. I don't live in New York. I live in Washington. But you hear a lot of complaints about the divisiveness of Giuliani, and certainly there was a lot of controversy during his time. There were a couple of spectacular police shootings that involved minorities that caused enormous controversy.
Mm.
On the other hand, you know, New York is a very democratic city. They elected Giuliani, and more importantly, they re-elected Giuliani. And the reason they re-elected him was because he made them safer. He realized that was the number one predicate of civil order and a good government. And I would say that there are probably thousands and thousands of African Americans who were not murdered in New York as a result of Giuliani's policies. So, you know, some of the anger at Giuliani I find I find baffling.
But Ellis, you know, and we heard it right there from Marlin, that anger persists. It was keenly felt at the time, the sense of this as a very divisive leader, despite some of the steps he took, which seemed to pay off for New York, was so deep. And Marlin says, look, this is not the kind of leader we need in this country at this time when we're such a diverse nation. I mean, can Giuliani, he managed to do it in New York, but could he get his hands around the whole polity of this big, diverse country?
Boy, that'll be a big challenge. You're right. I mean, some of it is factual results, but a lot of it in New York, and I suspect across America, it has to do with atmospherics. It's the way you carry yourself, the way you talk to people, the tones of your speeches. It's certainly, I think, undeniably true that Rudy over the years has been a divisive figure. Now, you know, not everybody is against that. There are probably some advantages to divisiveness, but don't be surprised if he becomes the president and that's the guy you get.
Let's go to Matt in Panama City, Florida. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The way I see it is basically, really, right now is the lesser of two evils. He's not part of the Washington bureaucracy. He's got a good record, basically, for being the guy who saved the country from 9/11. But other than that, from a conservative's point of view, he's just a little bit better than the rest of them. But he ain't really showing anything that makes us feel good about it.
Are you a values voter? Does his abortion stance bother you? His stance on gays and guns, are those problems for you, or are you, even if it's just marginally, willing to look beyond those because he's tough on terror?
Well, us in the South, as far as we're concerned, our values are more important than anything else. So that's basically what we lean on is values. And when somebody doesn't seem to have any values about how we feel, then it doesn't matter what you promise to do, you know?
So there's skepticism waiting to emerge, saying lesser of evils than Giuliani. Let's get another call from Amherst, Massachusetts. Saul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you see, Saul?
Well, bottom line, Rudy's the man for the job. No ifs, ands, or buts. With that said, it's obvious that a lot of his core beliefs might not fly with a lot of people in the breadbasket of America, in the heartland. But I'm a native New Yorker, although I moved out of New York before Rudy took over in the I moved out in the mid-80s to Amherst. But I would visit all the time, and it was very clear. The whole city was turned around. And I'm someone who likes to see results. It's to hell with what they say. Let's see what they do. I've read his book, Leadership, several times, and you really can get a good picture of the value of this man by reading his book. Yes, a lot of his benefits became just statistics and sound bites, but he really did the job. He did the job well in a democratic city. Will it fly in the country? That I can't see in my crystal ball, but I would vote for him in a heartbeat.
So let me ask you, you know how Giuliani really jammed on the city of New York to make some of those things happen. They happened, but he made a lot of enemies along the way as well. Do you think that style could work in the White House? Could it work nationally, globally, the Giuliani style?
Absolutely. You know, my father said, don't trust anybody who doesn't have anybody angry at them, because they'll always tell you what they want to hear and never stand on their own two feet. Yeah, he definitely created a lot of animosity, but he did the job. He took the bull by the tail. He did what had to be done, and like you said, he was reelected. So in a Republican, in a Democratic city, they just want to get the job. The people want to see someone who can get the job done.
Saul, we hear it loud and clear. Byron York, I wonder if on the conservative front, part of the explanation for why Rudy's still out there, despite positions which would rule out many candidates, is there something deeper in conservatism that he reaches to or speaks to, deeper than these particular positions? Is it that strong male figure, even though he's leaving wife after wife behind, married the second cousin and all the rest? You know, is this the man on horseback, strong male in the tribe kind of image? Is that turning conservatives on?
Well, I think other people would just call it leadership. I don't think I would go to that psychological level. I will say that the thing about Giuliani that he has to watch out for is this atmospherics thing, because, you know, our first caller talked about him disrespecting groups in New York, And I think that his performance at the Republican debate the other night, I would not be surprised if some Christian conservatives took it as quite disrespectful. I mean, he has not figured out a way to communicate, to talk to pro-life voters in the Republican primaries.
How can he? I mean, he's pro-choice.
It's not that hard. You say, look, I'm pro-choice. I have been for years. I can't change now. That would look ridiculous. But this is what I'm going to do. I support the Hyde Amendment. I will appoint these kind of judges, and I will not work against you. I will not ignore you in the White House. You know we disagree on these things, but I have all of these other strengths, and this is what I'm going to do. And he doesn't do that. He kind of equivocates his answer the other night that it would be okay if Roe were overturned, but it would be okay if Roe were not overturned. Was really appallingly careless, it seems to me. So he has to send the message to these people that he disagrees with them, but that he respects them, and he will not work against them in the White House. And so there that issue of respect comes up again, and he does have that problem with voters.
But then his finesse around issues like that, I guess he's not what he's most famous for. It's more the blunt statement. I mean, there's this famous little bit of tape here, 1999. Here's the mayor with a caller in New York. The city, they were outlawing ferrets as pets. A pro-ferret New Yorker called in, and the mayor just took after him. Many point to this as a sign of that temper, that unpredictable nature. Here's the exchange between the mayor and the New Yorker who wants a ferret as a pet.
Yes, I do care about the law. I think you have totally and absolutely misinterpreted the law because there's something deranged about you.
No, there isn't, sir.
The excessive concern that you have for ferrets is something you should examine with a therapist.
Sir, understand it. Well, first
not with me.
Don't go insulting me again.
I'm not insulting. I'm being honest with you. Maybe nobody in your life has ever been honest with you. But this excessive...
I happen to be more sane than you.
David,
first of all,
there is something... There is a serious...
Dear citizen, there is something deranged about you. Ellis Hennekin, is that inevitable with Rudy Giuliani? Is that just the way this guy's going to be?
Listen, all of us can grow in our characters, and I'm sure Rudy can as well. But those kinds of exchanges have been popping up for the last 20 years. You're absolutely right about that. I'd forgotten about that one. That was a funny one.
Can grow beyond it. But he wasn't a kid when he was saying that. And on the front page of the Wall Street Journal today, we've got this big story about potential conflict of interest. I mean, Giuliani's business, security, legal empire sort of sprawled out since 9/11. What about on that front, Ellis? Does he have problems?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. I mean, the Giuliani Partners, the business that he has been in since pretty much after he left City Hall, is a nest of those kinds of relationships that require explaining. The funny thing, though, tying it back to what we were talking about just a second ago, that moment in the Republican debate, that nonchalant shrug about, well, it's okay if they overturn, it's okay if they don't. What I think was so striking about that moment was that it was a statement of nonchalance from a guy who doesn't feel that way about anything. It makes you wonder whether that was calculated, whether it was thoughtless, as Byron Yark was saying, or whether there was some other policy bank shot in there that will only later on become apparent.
We're looking this hour at Rudy Giuliani and his race for the Republican nomination for the presidency. Ellis Hennekin, columnist for Newsday. He's covered Rudy in New York City for many years, is with us from New York. And from Washington, D.C., Byron Yark, author of The Vast Left-Wing Conspiracy and White House correspondent for the National Review, is here. Right now, Bill is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. What do you think?
Well, I like Giuliani. I don't know if I would vote for him yet. But one thing I do like about him that I see as a hope for the Republican Party, which I've been a member of all my life, is that he does not pander to the religious right. And I think that the Republicans used to get it back in the Reagan days, but since then they've started listening to the extreme right element, and it seems to me we've been losing ground ever since in the long run.
You've had the White House for quite a while. Some would say that 2004, you know, many said that was exactly what won George Bush re-election.
Well, yeah, I think in the real long view, the vast majority of the electorate, even in the Republican side of the aisle, is more open-minded than the right-wing people who have been running the party, and who I think are setting us up to get to have just lost the congressional elections and possibly the White House next. And I think that the vast majority of America and the Republican side is much more open-minded. And I think even Lee Atwater back in the Reagan mm-hmm. and Reagan days, I used to work for him when I first got out of college. You know, they understood that the Republican hard right, despite the primary problem, well, once you got to the general election, they were going to vote with you anyway. And we seem to have forgotten that. And so we pandered to them, and we ended up with a much more closed-minded party than I think is good for either us or the country.
So you see, maybe Rudy Giuliani is somebody who would reset the Republican kind of center mark there. Bill, thanks for that. Let me take that observation to another guest here. Jessica Eckhart is with us from Washington. She's executive director of the Conservative Eagle Forum. Jessica Eckhart, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
So you hear Bill in South Carolina. He says it's about time the Republicans, in his view, sort of pulled their party away from the religious right a bit. What do you say to that on the Giuliani front?
Well, I would say good luck with that. If folks chose that to be the case, it's really the social conservatives that fuel the GOP. We are the ones that go out knocking door to door, show up late hours. We have tons of folks that are going to churches, that are getting, homeschool families involved. Mm-hmm. And I just see the religious right, as folks call us, we are really the ground troops for the Republican Party. And I think that if we take this gentleman's suggestion and just ignore us and expect us to be there when it counts, I think that's really going to harm the GOP much more than he thinks it's going to benefit them.
So with that perspective, Jessica, how do you see the package that is Rudy Giuliani? Very tough on national security. Nobody talks tougher than Rudy. On the other hand, you know where he has stood on abortion and gay rights and gun laws. How do you look at that?
Sure. Yeah, Rudy is definitely not a social conservative. He doesn't come from any part of the conservative movement. Really, when you look at our movement as a whole, he grabs aspects of it when it comes to defense, but really, as a whole, he's not one of us. And Byron talked about it earlier, but in the debates last week, that was really clear. He was very cavalier in his indifference to Roe v. Wade, saying it could go one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And if you listen closely to what he said that he thought that judges were the ones who should decide that. And across the conservative movement, even pro-choice Republicans, even people who don't necessarily consider themselves pro-life, do not believe that judges are the best people to make these decisions. That is the one factor that has really unified the conservative movement under President Bush, has been his appointment of judges, and that we don't believe that judges should be legislating from the bench. So I think that's a fact that folks kind of missed that he mentioned last week. He really seems to be punting to the judges.
Byron York, here we go. Jessica Eckhart brings the flag of the religious right into the conversation and says, you know, Rudy doesn't cut it for us, and we are the ground troops of the Republican Party. You know, good luck without us.
Well, she's right. And the whole point for Giuliani is not to align himself with one side or the other, but try to walk a line between them and not alienate both sides, which I said earlier, I think he's doing a pretty poor job as far as the religious right is concerned. Another thing, a way to look at that, by the way, is you mentioned at the top of the program how he is leading in all the polls. That's true in the national polls, but, you know, recently we got some polls from Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, the first three states in all this, and they showed John McCain ahead in each state, and Giuliani second, and actually Giuliani was trending a little downward. So, you know, he is going to have to make this point. I mean, there are a lot of Christian conservative voters in Iowa, a lot of them in South Carolina, and he is going to have to make this point to them that he agrees with them on many, many things, and the things that he doesn't agree with them on, he's not going to stiff-arm them. He's going to listen to them and take their views into account.
Jessica Eckhart, let me put that to you then. Let's say it's McCain instead. Does that make you feel any better, or do you think that might turn conservative Christian Republicans back even to someone like Giuliani?
You know, it's not McCain does not make me sleep any easier at night either. Bringing his name up as someone who the conservative movement could support, I don't think he has been a friend of religious and social conservatives. He's spoken very hostily about us. The point is, really, when we're looking at the field of candidates, we're really letting the media choose our candidates, and also money. And I think that's really the underlying story that not very many folks are talking about, is that somehow the choices are only McCain, Giuliani, and Romney.
You've got the microphone right now. Who would you like to see?
We'd like to look at some of the second-tier candidates. We're looking closely at Duncan Hunter, a congressman who used to chair the House Armed Services Committee for years. He's a solid pro-lifer. He's a veteran. He's got across the board great marks from our organization, Eagle Forum, and he's obviously not as well known.
What if he can't win? I'm not saying he can't, but what if you finally concluded he couldn't win? Would you be willing to throw your chips with Giuliani, let's say, instead?
Absolutely not. No, I could not vote for Eagle Forum, or I could not vote for Giuliani personally. I don't think that many members of our organization would be able to do that. There are some in the movement who would say that it's better to have a Republican, some guy that we can have, quote, a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe that that's worth it. We need to choose based on principle, and now is the time when we can make that decision. 8 months from now, this thing will probably be over. But for folks to already be throwing their hands in the air and saying these are only three candidates, we don't have a choice, that already handicaps us from the beginning.
No way, no how, says Jessica Eckhart, Executive Director of the Eagle Forum. Jessica, always great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and John. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you see?
Thank you. The reason I'm calling is this discussion, being in Nashville, I have no experience with the administration or leadership of Rudy Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
I do, having spent my life as a management consultant, know something about how to select people to fill executive positions. And I guess what dismays me about the way we look at candidates for our top executive position is we consider everything except his management skills. We know that he likes to dress as a woman. We knew he...
Well, he did for fun in some kind of show. That's different than... To be fair, yeah.
We know he made one decision to put the control center in the World Trade Center, which everybody says was abominable. But we have no idea how he goes about taking decisions. How does he use his staff? How does he set standards of appraisal? I don't care what his position is on a particular issue, like abortion or any other such thing. How does he function as an executive?
But Byron York says, just look at the man. He is the executive model here.
Well, one can say that. I still have no idea what are his principles of organization. What are his principles of motivation and evaluation?
John, stick with us. Ellis Hennigan, what do you say to John in Nashville?
I'll give you my rundown. On the positive side, very clear in his vision, very strong in his will. On the negative side, overly loyal to incompetent cronies and not very good about listening from below but imposing his own personal views down the line. I think that would probably be both the pluses and the minuses of Rudy's organizational style.
Byron York, you hear John's skepticism about the executive management style, not just, strike the pose, but the management style of this man. What do you say to it?
Well, but his skepticism is based on not knowing, and it's not unusual if you don't live in New York and you don't go there to not know a lot about it.
But if you go to New York, people say he's nuts. He's stubborn. My way or the highway. When men were men, don't tread on me.
Campaigns are about learning about candidates. There's a book written a few years ago called Prince of the City by Fred Siegel about Rudolph Giuliani, and it's getting a lot of looks these days. People are reading it and getting a very good idea of Giuliani's strengths and his flaws.
Ellis, how should we interpret New York's own sort of reading of its former mayor? Because, yes, you've got that kind of interpretation, and you've got plenty of others. Michael Wolff recently, I was reading in Vanity Fair, says, the dirty little secret in New York is that this guy's kind of nuts in the way he applies power. I don't know if that's right, but is there a consensus out of New York City on his style along those lines?
It's a complex portrait, and that's part of what makes the guy so fascinating and so sort of fun to argue about. There are examples in there. We've heard a few of tremendous successes, and there's also this kind of strain of stubbornness and of weirdness that runs through it from the beginning to the end. So take your pick. It's, honestly, I think people look at Rudy and they see the Rudy they want to see.
John, in Nashville, management consultant, is what you hear emerging the profile you're looking for?
Well, those comments tell me that he has, for example, loyalty to his subordinates. George Bush likes subordinates who are loyal, and we currently have a government riddled with incompetence. And one by one, they're surfacing like dead fish floating to the top. If we had looked at George Bush's past experience, we would have seen that he bankrupted three companies, brought the state of Texas to the verge of bankruptcy, and is doing now the same for the United States. Those are his skills as an executive, as a manager. I don't care how good a Christian George Bush is. He doesn't know how to run anything.
So, look, this is just silly. I mean, you can certainly say that Giuliani is wrong for the country for a lot of reasons, but being a weak manager simply is not one of them.
Well, he's on the front page of the Wall Street Journal today with a headline saying Giuliani firm's potential conflict of interest. That doesn't sound like a golden merit badge, Byron.
No, it means that he has all sorts of business connections he's developed after leaving the mayor's office that could cause conflicts for him as a president. Here again, the caller was really talking about his management skills as if he had run several companies into the ground when he was an extraordinarily good U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, killing the mob there, and then having his record as a mayor. So you can dislike Giuliani for a lot of reasons and think he'd be a bad president. But the idea that he's a bad manager or an unskilled manager, simply, I can't imagine anybody would actually believe that.
Ellis,
hold
I hear
on
you
a
there.
Second, Byron. Yeah, because he's not wishy-washy. You're absolutely right about that. No one would accuse him of that. But I think that there are other ways of not being a great manager besides being unable to make a decision. I mean, excessive loyalty to awful people is a bad managerial trait. And I'll tell you, Don Rumsfeld has nothing on Bernie Kerik.
Let's take another call here from Eric in Boston. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am a registered Democrat, and I have to say that if the Republicans can be sort of calculated in this primary, they're going to be in a good position because they're going to have Democrats like me who are just waiting for a chance to vote for Judy in the general – sorry, to vote for Rudy in the general election. I think that if Rudy was not in the race, I'm going to vote for whoever comes up on the Democratic side because of who remains in the Republican primary.
Now, Eric, let me ask you about that, because you look at national polls, just the new numbers out today, George W. Bush down in the cellar, the Iraq War down in the cellar. Rudy Giuliani has linked himself more closely to the president and the war than maybe any other. I mean, he's been critical, but at the same time, he's had very he hasn't shied away from this. But still, as a Democrat, you think you vote for him and you think the country would, even though those, you know, the president and the war both have lousy numbers?
Well, I think the issue of leadership comes up there. And I actually lived in New York City during Giuliani's tenure, and he's an absolute strong leader. And even though we may not be approving of the Iraq War, which I certainly don't, it still needs to be handled in a strong fashion. And even though George Bush has made a complete disaster over there, Rudy Giuliani, among the candidates, I think is someone who could turn it around.
Eric, we've got it. Byron York, how about it? How do you read Giuliani's, you know, close stance to Bush, his reluctance to be critical of the president and the war compared to the other candidates? How do you read that as a stance, as a political position?
Well, I think he's walking a fine line, and I think what the caller indicates is there is a belief among some Republican strategists, certainly not all, that Giuliani could be more competitive in some of the blue states than any Republican candidate for quite a while. And they think that he could have Republicans are facing a huge headwind in 2008. Look, they just lost Congress, House, and Senate. George W. Bush is in the low 30s, if that. It's going to be very difficult for a Republican to get elected in 2008. So they feel that of the candidates who could appeal across party lines and appeal to those independents that are needed to get elected, maybe Giuliani would be that one.
Ellis, last word goes to you. What do you see in the Giuliani campaign? He's lost a little of that poll margin, but he's still full sail here. How vulnerable to Fred Thompson or Newt Gingrich? Could this guy push it over the hump despite all that, you know, sort of checkered history?
I'm not saying it's impossible, but let's remember there are two big races ahead. One is the primaries, where all that social stuff hurts you, but the support of the war and the support of the president probably helps you. And then there's a general election where it's precisely the opposite. Those social things are probably much closer to where America is, but boy, hugging George Bush and the Iraq War is going to be a heavy, heavy burden in the 2008 general election.
Well, it's some picture in Rudy Giuliani taking on that position right now. Thanks to both of you for being with us in this hour. Ellis Hennigan at Newsday, joining us from New York. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Great to be with you guys.
And Byron York, White House correspondent for the National Review. Byron, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.